This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. When a baby is born, everyone wants to know, is it a girl or a boy? But sometimes it's hard to answer that. According to the New York Times, at least one baby out of every 2,000 is born with ambiguous sexual traits. For example, genitals that may be either a small penis or a large clitoris, or gonads that are part testes, part ovaries. This condition has become known as intersexuality. For about 40 years, many of these cases have been handled by doctors who decided on a gender assignment for the baby and followed that up with corrective surgery. Enough time has elapsed for us to see some of the results and think about their implications for our understanding of gender and gender surgery. Be advised that we're going to discuss intersexuality in explicit anatomical and medical language. Our first guest, Cheryl Chase, is a member of the first generation of intersex babies to be treated with sexual assignment surgery. Her medical history was kept secret from her. She was 22 when she discovered the truth. She kept it a secret from everyone else until she turned 35 and became an intersex activist. Chase is the founding executive director of the Intersex Society of North America. It functions both as a support group for intersex people and an advocacy group that opposes gender surgery on infants and children unless it is medically essential. When Chase was born, doctors told her parents to raise her as a male and issued a male birth certificate. At 18 months, different doctors decided to reassign her to female and follow that up with gender surgery. I asked Chase if the first doctors gave her parents any advice in the days following her birth.
Well, I think that those first doctors were actually quite traumatized themselves. When I was born, my mother told me that the doctors fell silent and they wouldn't show me to her. And she became upset and they still wouldn't tell her what was going on. And when she became more upset, they sedated her. And every time she came out of sedation for 3 days, they sedated her again while they were trying to decide what to do with me. And after 3 days, they decided to label me male, but I know that they didn't have any particular data to base that decision on.
And what advice did the doctors give your parents about how to raise you?
They told my parents that I was a boy with a congenital defect and that there wasn't anything that they could really do to help except maybe surgery to bring my testes down, which couldn't come until later when I was 5 or so. And they sent my parents home, and after that, they refused to speak to them again. They wouldn't return phone calls.
Now, I believe your parents went to other doctors when you were about 1.5 years old. And what did they say?
Well, my parents visited some doctors who purported to be specialists in taking care of intersex children. And those doctors actually were a little bit more careful in a medical sense, and they did discern what my medical condition was. And they discovered that I had ovotestes. Each of my gonads was partly ovarian and partly testicular, and that it was possible for me to become pregnant as a female. They labeled me a female and immediately removed my clitoris.
Why did they remove your clitoris?
Because it was large, and they, even today, doctors believe that a large clitoris is extremely embarrassing. It's actually monstrous. It will prevent the parents from loving the child. It'll prevent the child from having any sense of their own body as female or as their own, and that the child may grow up homosexual.
What advice did the doctors give your parents about how to raise you after, as a girl, after they'd come to think of you as a boy?
They told my parents, I was 1.5 years old, and they told my parents that I was, in fact, a girl, and that having had this surgery, that I would be able to grow up normal, sexually normal. I would get married, I would have children, I would be heterosexual, and that they should change my name from a boy's name to a girl's name, which sounded similar so that I wouldn't notice, and that they should get rid of all of the blue clothes and baby things and buy pink ones, that they should comb their house for all evidence that their son had existed and destroy it, and that they should move to another town and not tell anyone where they went.
Did they do all of that?
Yeah, they did that.
Where did you move from and where did you move to?
They moved, not immediately, but a couple of years later, just from one town in New Jersey to another town. But the thing is that they certainly didn't cut off all of their ties with their friends and family. So later, when I discovered what had happened, that my sex had been changed and that I had been a boy for a year and a half, I learned that when I was 22, I was totally mortified to realize that everyone in my extended family and all my parents' friends must know that and think of it every time that they looked at me.
How did your parents explain it to their friends and family?
I have talked to my mother. My father died before I had a chance to talk to him about it, and to some other relatives. And I think that my parents were so traumatized that they couldn't talk about it. They just pretended it didn't happen. And if someone went to question them about it, they got a look that told them this was dangerous territory and it wasn't okay to ask.
Now, were you something of a medical mystery or medical curiosity to doctors over the years? Were you constantly getting examined, for instance, by the doctors who performed the surgery?
Well, the doctors who performed the surgery asked for my parents to bring me back annually and said that they wanted to do some more surgery some years down the line. My parents didn't go back, and I suspect that's because the whole experience was so traumatizing that they just didn't want to deal with it again. But when I was 8, they did go back. I think that the family physician knew that these doctors wanted to do some more surgery, and he sent us back there. They kept me in the hospital for some time. They did a lot of examinations, including x-rays and lots of blood work. And finally, they did some abdominal surgery, which I know now was a surgery in which they removed the testicular part of my gonads. But they didn't explain that to me at the time or any time after.
What did they tell you they were doing?
They told me that because I had had some stomach aches, they were going to look inside my abdomen and see if everything was okay.
My guest is Cheryl Chase. She's the executive director of the Intersex Society of North America. Intersex refers to a person who's born with some aspects of male and some female sexual characteristics. When she was born, she was labeled male, but 18 months later, new doctors came and labeled her female. So she was brought up male the first year and a half of her life, and then female ever since. And she's now a gender activist. Once you had access to your medical records and you started to understand the story in all its dimensions, did you still think of yourself as female?
I didn't really think of myself as female before I had the medical records. I didn't think of myself as male, but I also was quite well aware that I didn't feel female and I didn't feel quite like other women.
In what ways did you feel different from other women, or from how you imagined other women felt?
That's kind of hard to put into words. It was also really made complicated by the fact that I was very emotionally withdrawn and really a social misfit. I wasn't able to talk with other people.
Right, so you just felt different altogether.
Yeah.
And didn't associate it necessarily with your gender.
Yeah. When I read in my medical records, though, that I had had a sex change and that I was labeled a hermaphrodite, it said true hermaphrodite, it said pseudo-hermaphrodite, it said male hermaphrodite, female hermaphrodite, it said clitorectomy, it said phallus. All these things were really shocking to me, and I was profoundly shamed. I was mortified, and I didn't feel like I could talk about that with anyone.
I'm wondering if you identify now as male or female, or see yourself in a way as none of the above.
Well, I think now of sex and gender as being sort of bipolar, with these well-defined concepts of male and female, but people approach those to greater or lesser extent. And I'm sort of somewhere in the sphere of female, but not as firmly female as most women. And I'm very much aware all the time that I am not female in the way that people think of women as being.
As an activist, what's the message you're trying to give to doctors now about how they should deal with babies who are born intersex?
Intersexuality or sexual difference in general is not a medical issue, although there may be some medical issues associated with intersex. But the difference in itself is one that should not be considered shameful, and the child has to be given as much autonomy as possible in deciding what's going to be done with their body. I think that intersex children should be labeled a sex, but that sex should not be surgically enforced on infants, and that the parents and the child as they grow a little bit older need access to peer support and to qualified mental health counseling. So sort of to sum it up is we want counseling rather than cutting.
It would be your hope that doctors wouldn't surgically intervene to define gender. And then when a child reached a mature age, that if they wanted surgery, they'd have it on an elective basis. Is that accurate?
That's right.
I'm wondering if you think that a child would cope well with ambiguous sexual organs. I mean, that too is a lot to ask of a child.
Well, we actually have people in the intersex society who haven't had surgery, either because they grew up, they're a little bit older, they grew up before surgery became commonplace, or because somehow they fell through the cracks. And, you know, by comparing their experience with ours, by talking with each other, we find that we envy the ones who had no surgery, and they are horrified to find out what happened to the rest of us.
What do you envy about them?
I envy their intact genitals and their sexual function. You know, people in our culture, we talk about sex a lot, but we are really only permitted to talk about how good it is. And that's an experience that I feel very much left out of. Sex is very difficult for me. I don't have easy arousal, and I have no sense of relief. There's no orgasm. There's no relief, and a lot of times it's difficult for me to engage in it at all.
Now you're an activist. You founded the Intersex Society of North America. How did you end up going from feeling really withdrawn and feeling like this was a secret that you couldn't possibly discuss with anyone, to feeling like it was that you wanted to use your story as a kind of case study in what could go wrong and how not to handle an intersex birth?
Ultimately, the pain of keeping that secret and that shame inside became so great that I couldn't live with it anymore. And I realized that the thing that was really hurting me was not the fact of my intersexual birth. It was the fact that it was made secret and shameful. And that in order to prevent that kind of hurt from being inflicted on intersex infants being born every day, what I wanted to do was to make intersex less shameful. And the way to do that is to, rather than hide, is to come out about it.
Cheryl Chase, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks, Terry.
Cheryl Chase is the founding executive director of the Intersex Society of North America.